The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. Of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and toquettes, and welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, February 6, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. So glad you could join us today. We've had a lot of fun this morning here in Rolla J Studios, primarily because the Joker to my Batman, Kevin Sabet, was on Huffington Post Live today with Ryan Grimm. He was also debating against Ethan Nadelman yesterday on Fox Business News. He's been making a whole lot of appearances, kind of like Punxsutawney Phil this time of year, predicting six more years of drug war, I guess. We'll have that Huffington Post Live clip today for our radical rant, except I get a little pause button so that I can debunk the lies, falsehoods, and mischaracterizations coming out of Kevin Sabet's face during the interview. So stay tuned for that. Also on today's show, you know, it's Wednesday, middle of the week. That means it's time for Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. He's joining us at half past the hour, taking your live calls at 971-533-7111 or through our chat room on Ustream. Just type /login to create yourself a Ustream account, and you can get your questions in via chat. We're going to be asking about a new study that has broken today. I saw this just before airtime that supposedly says that pot smokers have a much higher incidence of stroke as young adults. So we'll talk to Dr. Mitch about that. Also on today's show, we're going to be commemorating a very important day in an Iree Wednesday community, and that is Bob Marley. And Brian can tell us a little bit more about what's happening on today, as it's Bob Marley's.
Well, it's about the celebration of Bob Marley's birthday. He would have been 68 today. He was born on February 6th, 1945, and died May 11th. 1981, just 1 month before I was born.
That's right.
So he left the world way too soon.
But and we've got some special clips.
We've got a clip up from an interview that was done with him in 1979, and you guys should dig that.
All right, we'll have that plus some Iree Wednesday music and Red Eyes Reggae Flashback preview for tonight at 8 p.m. Pacific time. But first, we'll get to our 420 radio headlines. In Washington State, they're looking at a bill that would clear marijuana misdemeanors. Mexico's president brings up the gateway theory. Michigan's government's making a ton of money on medical marijuana. Alabama votes down medical marijuana. And labor unions are looking to medical marijuana. All that and more coming up on The Russ Belville Show.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420-friendly sponsors. Support these advertisements because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Cast your eyes up to the skies. What is it to live and die?
Uh-huh.
California is the center of marijuana consciousness. That's why High Times Magazine is returning to the Golden State for our second High Times Medical Cannabis Cup in Los Angeles. That's right. Come to LA Center Studios on February 16th and 17th for this high-flying event. Meet the medical cannabis industry, visit our extra special medicating area, and sample the best cannabis products of Southern California. There'll be cultivation seminars and presentations about getting pot legalized, not just in California, but everywhere. Be there on Saturday evening when we host a Rock'em Sock'em concert with surprise musical guests. And don't forget Sunday night and the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup Awards when we honor the best sativa, best indica, best hybrid, best concentrate, and best edibles of the LA medical cannabis scene. Plus, we present the High Times Lifetime Achievement Award to marijuana superstar Tommy Chong. Come to the City of the Angels on February 16th and 17th for a High Times cannabis celebration. Go to MedCanCup.com for details. Live the high life. Be proud of who you are. Be part of the growing cannabis community.
Now it's time for your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, February 6, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Washington State lawmakers to discuss clearing cannabis misdemeanors from theweedblog.com. Announced just a few days ago, House Bill 1661 is a piece of legislation that every reform advocate should have their eyes on, not to mention anyone who has or knows someone who has a cannabis possession charge on their record. House Bill 1661 would explicitly allow individuals charged with a cannabis possession misdemeanor in Washington State to have it removed from their record. This is true whether the plea was guilty or not guilty. Not only would this apply retroactively to Washington's new one-ounce decrim to those already convicted, it allows charges to be cleared for possession up to 40 grams and for those 18 and older. Any charge that falls under RCW 69.50.4014. Now, to take into consideration that over 240,000 people were arrested in Washington State for cannabis possession between 1986 and 2010, with an additional 10 to 20,000 since, of those convicted, the vast majority would have the ability to remove or vacate the charge from their record if House Bill 1661 were to pass. This could make the difference between these people getting a job and a place to live, or constantly being denied both. It would also have a substantial effect on student loans, as many are denied funding based on cannabis convictions, even for simple possession. Mexico's president opposes legalizing marijuana, calls it a gateway drug, from the Washington Post. More than 12,000 people were murdered last year in the Mexican drug war, a figure that's been largely unchanged over the past 3 years. Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto has vowed to cut down on the violence, and he recently talked with the German news magazine Der Spiegel about his priorities. Here are a couple of highlights. Der Spiegel asks, "Some U.S. states have relaxed the prohibition of marijuana. Doesn't that deprive the drug war of its credibility?" President Peña Nieto says, "It should at least encourage a debate. I'm opposed to legalizing marijuana because it acts as a gateway drug." Shortly after Colorado and Washington voted to legalize the drug, Peña Nieto's top advisor, Luis Videgaray, told a radio station in Mexico, quote, "Obviously, we can't handle a product that is illegal in Mexico trying to stop its transfer to the United States, when in the United States, it now has a different status." Marijuana program is windfall for the Michigan government, from the Detroit Free Press. Medical marijuana is turning out to be a windfall for Michigan state government. A report says nearly $10 million in revenue was collected from applicants, more than double the cost of running the program. The report covers the state's last budget year, which ended September 30th. A medical marijuana application costs $100. Caregivers who grow marijuana for people also pay a fee. Alabama House panel votes no on medical marijuana, from the San Francisco Gate. An Alabama House committee has defeated a bill that would have legalized the sale of medical marijuana. The committee voted 12-2 against the bill by Democratic Representative Patricia Todd of Birmingham. Todd told committee members that marijuana can ease the pain of people suffering from cancer or other diseases. Committee members had little to say before voting to kill the bill. Shrinking U.S. labor unions see relief in marijuana industry, from Reuters.com. During the last few years, unions, led by the UFCW, have played an increasingly significant role in campaigns to allow medical marijuana, now legal in California, 17 other states, and Washington, D.C. In the November elections, UFCW operatives also helped get out the vote efforts in Colorado, where voters approved a measure that made possession of 1 ounce or less of the drug legal for anyone 21 and older. Washington State approved a similar measure, and both states require regulation of marijuana growers, processors, and retailers. Union officials acknowledge that their support stems partly from the idea that the marijuana industry could create hundreds of thousands of members at a time when overall union membership is shrinking. Union officials say there are now 3,000 UFCW members who work in the cannabis industry, a tiny fraction of the union's 1.3 million members. An analysis by Sea Change Strategies, a research firm for nonprofit organizations, estimated that the medical marijuana market could grow to $8.9 billion by 2016. A study by Washington State's Office of Financial Management said legalization could result in $1 billion in sales per year in the state, which is home to about 2% of the U.S. population. UFCW estimates 100,000 workers could be added in California alone. And that's your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, February 6, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines and take... This is the Russ Belville Show. We'll be right back. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215. Or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
All right, folks, welcome back. Time for us to go behind the headlines, where we've proved definitively that long-term exposure to cannabis smoke may cause a decline in performance every 1,000 shows. So, welcome back. The segment here for Behind the Headlines, I wanted to take a look at Project Sam again. They've put out a whole bunch of new stuff that we need to call shenanigans on. A new set of menus, that is, up at the top of their blog. And this comes under the heading The Issues. And they've got a series of issue papers that they're issuing, I guess. And I wanted to take a look at one of them. This is their legalization paper. And what's so fun about looking at their stuff is a lot of times they will link back to studies or surveys that don't paint their side in a very good light. So I bring this to you to give you a chance to debunk these things. You're going to hear a lot of Kevin Sabet on Fox, on CNN, on MSNBC. They're going to be in all of these news shows trying to get this kinder, gentler drug war to take hold. And I want to make sure you're all armed and ready with the facts to go at these people. And again, big thanks to our own Stereotype, who was in the chat room during the Kevin Sabet thing on HuffPost Live, got one of his questions in. That's exactly what we're all about here, is giving you the tools to win these sort of debates. So let's take a look. One of the points they're trying to make here, and this is a big part of their strategy, is to set the idea that we can't legalize marijuana because we have alcohol and tobacco that are legal, and because they're so legal, they're so available to people. And the stat that they bring out
to make this scare is that according to recent surveys, alcohol is used by 52% of Americans and tobacco is used by 27% of Americans, while marijuana is only used by 8% of Americans. So the fear here is that, oh my God, alcohol's legal, half the people use it. Tobacco's legal, you know, almost a third of the people use it. Gosh, marijuana being illegal keeps people from using it. But the stats they're linking to, this is information that comes from the National Surveys on Drug Use and Health, and they're measuring monthly use of these substances. If you take a look at the monthly stats for the use of those substances in 1993, 30 years ago, it was 60% of the people drank, not 52. It was 37% of the people smoked, not 27. And it was 14.5% of people that used marijuana, not 8%. So in the 30 years, it's gone down for all of the top three most popular drugs. Now, how many people did we arrest for alcohol or tobacco to make that happen? The scare here is that somehow we legalize marijuana and suddenly more people will use it. But the facts are that one person who doesn't smoke pot right now would have to smoke pot for every two people who currently smoke pot in order to get the levels up to where they were in 1979. And I don't recall the sky falling in 1979. Another part that they bring up in this legalization page is that they want to distract you from the idea that legalizing marijuana would have any impact on the criminals that currently run the marijuana market. And part of how they do this is to try to say that, well, the Mexican cartels and all that violence out of Mexico has very little to do with marijuana. In fact, Kevin Sabet today actually stated, and you'll see this in the rant later today, that the violence in prohibition has very little to do with marijuana. Well, what he is linking to for that information is a study from the Rand Corporation in 2010 during the Prop 19 campaign for California that found out that if California legalized marijuana, it would only have an impact of 2-4% on the Mexican cartel's revenues. And that's because Californians largely get their marijuana from California. They don't need a lot of Mexican brickweed coming in. And prohibition would still exist in all the other states, especially the states throughout the Midwest where that Mexican brickweed is primarily sold. So yeah, legalizing in California might have a negligible 2-4% impact on the sales of, on the marijuana revenues of the cartels. But isn't a 2-4% impact better than no impact on the cartels? Why do we give them any marijuana business? And if you dig deeper into that Rand report, you find that 15-26% of the cartel's overall income derives from marijuana. 15-26%, anywhere from a sixth to a quarter of their income derives from marijuana. So sure, California might not be able to take a chunk out of that, but the whole nation could if it were legalized nationally. Finally, the last part of this legalization thing that just, it literally had me LOLing. I was literally laughing out loud when I got to this study. And this is where they tried to point out that that it's more accessible for kids to get alcohol and tobacco than it is for them to get marijuana. Now, this comes from surveys that were done by Joe Califano out at CASA for a long time. This is the Columbia Addiction Substance Abuse Center. And they used to ask what's easiest to buy. And kids would always say it's easier to buy marijuana than it is to buy alcohol because, of course, alcohol, they check your ID. That wasn't a flattering statistic to those people. So they changed the wording. Can you access marijuana, alcohol, or tobacco? And yeah, the kids said it was easier to access alcohol or tobacco because their folks might have some. And now the SAM people are trying to scare you by saying, aha, see, alcohol and tobacco are legal. Kids have a lot of access to that. If we made marijuana legal, kids would have more access to that. So I went and looked up this survey, this CASA survey that they were linking this information back to. And when I scrolled down and I saw the chart for this piece of data, that's what literally made me laugh out loud. I could not believe that this study was what they were going to use to defend keeping marijuana out of the hands for kids, because it came up with this nice bar chart that said 91% of teens know someone at their school who sells marijuana. Let me say that again. 91% of teens, 10 out of 11 teens, know somebody at their school who sells marijuana. Now, when compared to other drugs, those numbers are way lower. When they asked, do you know someone at your school who sells cocaine? Only 9% said yes. Do you know someone at your school that sells cigarettes? 6%. And when they asked, do you know someone who sells alcohol at your school? Only 1% of kids could name a kid at school who sells alcohol. And that's because there is no such thing as a teenage alcohol dealer. There's no profit in it. It's too difficult to keep a hold of. It's too difficult to get when they're carding you for it.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Marijuana is harmless. That's what everybody says these days. It's fun. It's recreational. Some even call it medicine. But every year, millions of young people find out that marijuana is extremely dangerous. Every year, they find out that it's deadly. Marijuana smoke is lethal and toxic. Don't believe anything you've ever heard positive about smoking marijuana. It will kill you. Really. It's really gonna kill you. Don't smoke it. It will really, really kill you. Seriously. It's gonna kill you.
Funky roller ring.
Oh yeah.
What's happening, Groovy Cats? This is your Funk Master of Ceremonies, Big Daddy. And I want you to join me every Thursday night at 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, right here at the Funky Roller Ring.
Oh yeah.
Your home of soul, funk, and disco, baby.
Funky-licious.
There's always a party at the Funky Roller Ring.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Irie Wednesday, featuring reggae, ska, and other world music genres. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
All right, today is a very special Irie Wednesday because, of course, it's February 6th, and that's Bob Marley's birthday. We turn things over to Brian the Red for a little introduction for these clips that we've got.
Well, we did have just one clip we were playing before the Daily Toker tune, which was from last week, which was called Drug War. But the clips are from an interview that was done with Bob Marley when he was here in the States back in 1979. And, yeah, I just kind of clipped up some poignant responses, some of his, you know, mental ramblings, but, you know,
yeah, some of his
part of where he's coming from.
Sure.
So here's a little bit of information, you know, from the words from the mouth of the man, you know, himself. So
we have something which is Rastafari, right? So, you know, politics is out. I believe that every house where His Majesty have must be united. Some man believe that only this house right and that one wrong and that one wrong and all the rest wrong. Well, I know that God never make a mistake. So if him have the 12 tribe and him have the Naya Bingi, him have the Ethiopian Orthodox, and him have the RMA, and him have this, there must be a man somewhere we can bring all of this thing together. You see, the whole thing is, them people, you can't tell them must be Russian, Cuban, or American, because then it's Rasta. them take that vow, them is like can't change. He's Rasta in this time because the spirit in the earth, you know. So every youth them kill on the street, whether I'm have dreadlocks or wherever I'm is, as long as him's a youth, the Rasta them kill. Because if him grow for mature, him going to be a Rasta. But them try to kill them young, you know. Yeah, he say kill them before they grow because his reggae influence them. But even the white man have a right to say, to know that Haile Selassie is God and defend him, you know. So as long as them not defend Rasta, it don't make sense until them defend Rasta.
Now you are responsible in bringing reggae out into this world. As far as you're concerned, really, what is reggae?
Reggae is a vehicle, that's used to transmit a message of redemption to the people on earth today. We use it for that. You have an next man and use it for just dance, you know. But we use it for convey the message, because I don't see no other music can carry the message as good as it. It's not easy. You know, it's not very easy. Because to some people belly full, you know, them protest for the system. Them fight for the system because them cool, them belly full. But you have a lot of hungry people now. Where them could have full them belly if them want, them could have fight for the system and full them belly, but them prefer remain hungry and fight for freedom. More than for those giant, for those a belly full. You know what I mean? Yeah. I personally believe that I must help and do the work. I believe in God help those who help themselves. That means if something is going on, I must make a move to change it.
Happy birthday, Bob Marley. This is Standout Selecta with Julia Rose and Sarah I with Drug War.
War between the rich and the poor, and you know it's at the heart of it, drug business. And I'm through with that, see? Stand up for them case again.
I said drug war is a problem to a general. I said drug war is a problem to me. I said drug war is a problem to a general. I said drug war is a problem to me. What the children them don't understand, the addiction, well it's never planned. Save up your money from day one. When you light up the coke pipe and something don't feel right, look in your pocket and your money's done. You're living the high life and something don't feel right. Go to the store and you steal up a gun. Hear me now, I say. I say drug war is a problem to a general. I say drug war is a problem to me. I say drug war is a problem to a general. I said drug war is a problem to me.
Teach the youth them how to survive. Why can't they just stay alive? Lose up your house and you lose all your friends. Some say for the weed that I smoke, I should be punished like the coke. But herb is nature and this I do.
Not all
people can see the truth. Share some wisdom with the youth. Demand future politician better eat the vibe. It's our only chance to stay alive. It's rumbling forward in the US of A. Pushing straight ahead even in the UK. Even on the viz, you could catch us straight. Just ask my herdsman and he will say how the gangster came down and drove him away. He said drug war is a problem to a general. I said drug war is a problem to me. I said drug war is a problem to a general. I said drug war is a problem to me.
Busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Oh, we're having trouble getting through to Dr. Mitch right now, getting just a busy signal on his line. So we will try that call once again. But before we do, I want to make you aware of this study that we wanted to take a look at here. This is coming out of Fox News. I just saw this come across the line. According to a new study from the University of Auckland in New Zealand, marijuana may double the risk of ischemic stroke and transient ischemic attack, TIA, in young adults, even those who had no risk factors that often contribute to an attack. The study's lead author, Dr. P. Allen Barber, a professor of clinical neurology at the University of Auckland, said he was interested in studying the link between stroke and marijuana after a curious incident of stroke occurred in one of his younger patients. Conducting the first case-controlled study of its kind, Barber and his colleagues studied 160 ischemic stroke or TIA patients between the ages of 18 to 55, an average of age 45, who had their urine samples screened when they entered the hospital. As a comparison, the researchers examined urine samples from another 160 control subjects who had been admitted to the hospital for other medical reasons. Of the 160 stroke patients, 16% tested positive for marijuana use within the past couple days, compared to only 8.1% of the control patients. According to Barber, the stroke patients were very well matched to the controls, with no differences in age, mechanisms for stroke, or other vascular risk factors. So this is the latest scare that we're getting out of Fox News, and we'll go to our phone line here, see if we've got Dr. Mitch. Are you on the line? Okay, we're having difficulties here connecting with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, but the first thing I noticed about this particular study that gives pause doesn't come until much later in the Fox News report. As is typical, the headline is going to say, smoking marijuana linked with higher risk of stroke in young adults. The lead is going to tell you that marijuana may double the risk of ischemic stroke. But when you get down deep into the Fox News story on this, down to about, I think it's paragraph 12 or 13, you find this little line. While the study provides the strongest evidence ever of the link between cannabis use and stroke, The research does come with a catch. Of the 16% of stroke patients who were marijuana users, almost all of them smoked tobacco regularly. Okay, so you got this major confounding factor of tobacco use, which we know has all sorts of terrible issues with respect to cardiovascular health. And it just so happens that, yeah, they also smoke marijuana as well. We've also seen some problems between mixing marijuana and tobacco, how marijuana can make the deleterious effects of tobacco even worse. So is it surprising that they're seeing a double risk of stroke if they're also constant tobacco smokers? This kind of shoddy research that's coming out, and you know what? I should really pin the blame where it belongs. Shoddy journalism. I'll bet if we go into this study and we looked through it, that these researchers were very careful to point out the limitations of how this data could be analyzed and could be reported upon. But, you know, people like, you know, institutions like Fox News are going to jump right on any sort of scary statistic they can find about the risk of marijuana to young people. And it underscores something that has always bothered me about the Kevin Sabets of the world and these people that claim to be the crusaders for the health of the children and for the plight of the addicts. And this is their constant wailing about the money. About how the anti-drug or how the anti-prohibition organizations and the George Soros-fueled drug lobby have all this money to throw at, you know, getting marijuana legalized. And, oh, us poor Project Sam people, we're so broke with our Kennedy on the board. We just don't have enough money. I actually saw Kevin Sabet's debate, and I wanted to get this one up for today, too, but we'll have to save this for another time. He was on with Ethan Nadelman on the Fox News channel and actually went with a quote, and I'll paraphrase here if I can remember it as close as I can. His quote was along the lines of, the drug legalization lobby or the pot legalization lobby sure is throwing a lot of money at Jared Polis, that Representative Polis, basically implying that Representative Polis is only standing up for these marijuana measures because of all the lobbying money and all the lobbying that's going at him from the marijuana legalization organizations. Jared Polis, people. The quarter billionaire Jared Polis. We're swaying him with our massive, massive George Soros-fueled drug money. Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. So it infuriates me when guys like him say that kind of stuff. Meanwhile, you have an entire apparatus at Fox News dedicated to promoting the worst possible aspects of marijuana use, giving a platform to all of the people who hate marijuana use. You have an entire federal bureau, an office of national drug control policy, whose sole job is to stop people from trying to use, well, not sole job, but one of their prime directives is to try to stop people from using marijuana. You have entire government organizations, National Institutes for Drug Abuse, National Institutes for Health, all of these alphabet soup of organizations funded by our tax dollars to constantly set the drumbeat and keep the message that adults cannot use marijuana. And you want to complain that we're overwhelming you. Because, you know, we're better at Twitter because we're better at making websites. And, oh, yeah, facts, reason, science and logic have a notoriously pro-legalization bias. Yes, those are the problems. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I apologize. We weren't able to get Dr. Mitch on the line with you tonight. We will have him on next week here on our Cannabis Q&A segment. In the meantime, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we'll take a look at Kevin Sabet today, just a couple hours ago on Huffington Post Live, and take a little time to debunk and call shenanigans.
It's simply business. It's simply business. It's simply business, you know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show. the voice of the marijuana nation.
It's simply business. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
The March issue of High Times magazine is here, just in time for playoff season in the National Football League. But did you know that NFL players who use pot receive the toughest penalties in sport? In our March 2013 issue, High Times investigates the NFL's wrong-headed policies and examines how pot can help athletes off the field. We also tee up an outstanding profile of one of the world's greatest strains with the haze craze. Senior cultivation editor Danny Danko weighs in on the origins of this outstanding sativa. And editorial director Dan Skye takes a high-minded look at the outdoor harvest of 2012. Growers are getting higher prices for their product and strains are better than ever. Plus, we'll take you inside of one of the most unique gardens you'll ever see, a state-of-the-art underground bunker that allows growers to create the perfect environment for pot. Also in this issue, Saturday Night Live's Jason Sudeikis drops by to talk about his new film, Movie 43. And guess what? Jason likes pot. Plus, we cover the most important story of the year. Pot is legal in Colorado and Washington. Pick up the March issue of High Times magazine for the very best marijuana coverage on the planet. Be part of the growing cannabis community. On newsstands now.
When I was in England, I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale, and never tried it again.
I think you'd probably be a lot cooler if you had, Mr. President.
I said, hey, do you have a joint cancer? Would be a lot cooler if you did. Lie to don't hide it.
Lie to don't hide it.
Oh, lie to don't hide it.
Lie to don't hide it.
Just lie to don't.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
All right, folks, on today's rant, we're going to take a little time for video, watching a little HuffPost Live, where Ryan Grimm, the author of This Is Your Country on Drugs, one of the best books on the history of drug prohibition in America. You got to check that one out. Ryan Grimm had a one-on-one interview with Kevin Sabet from Project Sam, otherwise known as the Joker to my Batman. And Kevin was there defending Project Sam and taking questions via Twitter and their chat room there, one of which came from our own Stereotype, on his stance on marijuana legalization. So we're going to watch a little bit of that with some breaks to analyze on our own. Enjoy.
Recently announced they are introducing legislation to reform federal marijuana policy. Their bills would allow states to decide whether to prohibit marijuana and provide a system of marijuana regulation and taxation in states where it's legal. Joining us to discuss these marijuana reform bills as well as federal prosecution of medical marijuana is our very own HuffPost Washington Bureau Chief Ryan Grimm and former White House drug policy advisor Kevin Sabet. Guys, welcome. Ryan, tell us a little more about these bills.
Sure. Thanks so much for having us here. We're here with Kevin Sabet, who was recently named the number one enemy of the pot legalization movement. Is that right?
Yeah, I have the medal framed at home.
I think we ought to make him a medal. What do you say?
I don't think it would cost a whole lot. I know a couple of shops around town that can do it.
You know what? It shouldn't be a medal. It should be blown glass, don't you think? Number one pot legalization enemy. It should be functional blown glass.
A functional art piece?
Oh,
I don't know if we waste
administration. Yeah. So Bush, Clinton, and the Obama administration for the first couple of years. So I tweeted out earlier, asked people to send in questions for him. So if you have more questions, send them to at Ryan Grimm, and we'll get them to him. The thing about Kevin is that what makes him dangerous to the Rolling Stone crowd is that he's effective at delivering the anti-legalization argument, which is extremely unusual among the drug warrior set, because most of them, you know, find it so difficult to have a rational conversation about it that it's all, you get into all kinds of insanity like we got into last week. I won't even mention what the one guy said last week.
I will. I'll mention what the one guy said last week. It was Paul Chabot. Chabot, whatever his name is, Chabot. Paul Chabot, who basically compared marijuana use to child pornography. You know, we got to keep these kind of things illegal.
So the first one we'll start with here is from Sound of Cylons.
Okay.
Are you anti-cigarettes, beer, liquor, guns, etc.? If not, is this not philosophically dishonest?
Yeah. Great question. I'm really happy to be here, especially in the studio. It's not.
Wait a minute. Remember the question is, are you against alcohol and tobacco as you are against marijuana? Otherwise, it seems philosophically dishonest. Let's see if he gets anywhere near answering that question.
About being anti something or pro something. It's about what is the best policy to reduce both the harms of a certain behavior itself, whether it's those things that were just mentioned or marijuana in this case, and while at the same time reduce the harms of implementing that policy. So we all have to acknowledge that every policy has ups and downs. I happen to think at the end of the day, when you look at the science, the cons for me outweigh the pros for legalization. That doesn't.
All right. So that would tell me that as far as alcohol and tobacco go, the cons don't outweigh the pros. Okay.
It doesn't mean that I'm happy with everything that's going on now. There's no way you can be happy with a lot of the arrest severity that's going on. There's no way you can be happy with the racial disparities in arrests that we see in places where, white kids have a basement to smoke in. A lot of times black kids are out in this public stoop. Mm-hmm. They're more likely to be arrested. Those are things I think we should change. So.
And how do we change that?
It's just about
how,
that kind
how
of
how do you mitigate that then?
Well, I think you don't need to legalize marijuana in order to mitigate.
We don't need to legalize marijuana, which means keep it criminal, right? Which means keep it illegal, which means the people who are white and they're doing it in their basements won't get caught, and the people who are black and doing it on stoops will. So what exactly are we changing, Kevin?
That what you can actually do is make sure that that person who is out on the stoop smoking pot doesn't, you know, our knee-jerk reaction isn't jail or a long-term arrest record to stigmatize them from getting a job, but our knee-jerk reaction is, does this kid have a chance at an economic opportunity? Is there a job for him? What about education? Those kinds of things have to be explored.
Okay, yes, we agree that there should be more economic opportunities for disadvantaged youths in our inner cities, but that meanwhile, when the kid on the stoop is caught for marijuana, if our knee-jerk reaction is not to lock him up, then what is our reaction? To leave him alone and let him smoke marijuana, or to do something to try to stop him, which in your case usually is rehab and mandated assessments. And if he does not continue that rehab or mandated assessments that we don't know how this kid manages to pay for, then what happens is jail. So what exactly has changed?
So this is a good follow-up to that one. This is from at Dr. Iffel, Dan Riffel. Cigarette smoking is way down, especially among teens, yet we haven't arrested or forced treatment on anyone. Why can't we do that for pot?
Well, twofold answer. First of all, the thing about cigarettes is that let's look at the baseline where we are with cigarettes. With all of the education and every single law on cigarettes out there, I mean, I don't even know where you can smoke these days. Even in your own home, you're going to get kicked out by your girlfriend or wife or your spouse or whatever if you smoke. So the issue is, even with all these sort of soft prohibitions, 27% of Americans still smoke. One out of four.
Right, which used to be 37% of Americans 30 years ago. A number that has gone way down through all of those soft prohibitions you just mentioned.
For Americans, over 55% of Americans drink. How many people smoke marijuana? Our household surveys say about 8% of people are regular users. So, you know, something about illegality does drive use down. Even when you have, we've had this big pushback against cigarettes, which I think is good. The second part of the answer.
Wait a minute. Illegality is what drives use down. So, apparently, it's only the fact that heroin is illegal that keeps people from running out and getting a bunch of heroin. Apparently, it's only cocaine being illegal that keeps a whole bunch of people from running out and doing cocaine. And yet, when we look throughout history at the start of the 20th century, about 1.3% of the people had a drug problem. When you could buy any drug you wanted out of a Sears catalog, you could get opium out of the Sears catalog. About 1.3% of the people were addicted. Now, when drugs are highly restricted in schedules, about 1.3% of the population have an addiction problem. a number that has remained virtually unchanged throughout various temperance movements throughout our history. About 1.3% of the people have an addiction problem. The type of drug they might be addicted to may shift based on demands, based on supply, but about 1.3% of the people have an addiction problem. So again, Kevin, what is changing?
There is, I think cigarettes are the last example for a policy we would want for marijuana. Let's look at our cigarette policy over the last 80 years and not forget what happened. We had big tobacco peddling tobacco, saying, first of all, it's medicine. You know, in the 50s, tobacco was medicine. It's pretty interesting now with marijuana.
Because doctors saying that tobacco was medicine back in the 50s is a lot like people 60 years later, after careful research in 18 states approving its medical use, saying that it's medicine. It's a very interesting comparison. Remember all those states that passed voter initiatives for medical tobacco? Remember when that happened? Remember when there was all about 16,000 studies on PubMed on the efficacy of tobacco on various conditions, like apoptosis for cancer cells, for example? Remember all that? No, you don't, because it didn't happen, because tobacco is not medicine, and the people who were saying tobacco was medicine were lying about it in order to sell something that was toxic and addictive. They won't have to lie about how safe marijuana is, because it's safe.
Downplayed the harms to kids. They actually make money off of addiction. That is no model for marijuana.
And the model of big tobacco is a fantastic model for what we could do with marijuana, because it provides for us 60 years of experience on what not to let happen. When was the last time you saw Joe Camel? 1998. When was the last time you saw the Winston Cup? About the same time. Why? Because we came up with ways, even with a First Amendment, to restrict the advertising of tobacco and stop its marketing toward kids. We also learned from tobacco that we need to be strict about IDing kids, that we need to not have it just on the counters where kids can swipe it, but behind the counters, under lock and key. We found out that we needed to have massive public education programs to tell people what the real harms of tobacco are. And since we have done that, in my lifetime, from when I was a teenager and 70% of my schoolmates had tried tobacco, now only 42% of the kids in high school have tried tobacco. From a time 30 years ago when I was out of school and 37% of adults were smoking, now 27% of adults are smoking. I think tobacco would be a fabulous model for us to adopt, because we never arrested a single smoker to accomplish that.
What if we use the current model for tobacco, which is advertising is extremely restricted.
Right.
If you sell to kids, you're going to get a huge you're going to get a huge fine.
Yeah.
The taxes are extremely high, and the money used with the revenue that's raised is then spent on a public health education campaign to try to reduce demand. So why couldn't that work?
Well, because I think it sounds great, and I agree in principle with that. But in reality, I really don't think that would happen. So here's
agree in principle.
Well, let me tell you what I mean by that.
Okay.
Well, no, but agree in principle with a public health approach to focus on education. Why I think that wouldn't happen with marijuana legalization is that for every dollar we get in tobacco taxes, and tobacco taxes are high right now. I mean, that's why we have a black market in this country and around the world. But that's another story. For cigarettes, for every dollar in taxes, we spend 10 in social costs.
All right, so now we're going to divert to the Sabbat conjecture, and I'll get back to that in a second. But remember the question Ryan Grimm asked was, why couldn't with marijuana we do what we do with tobacco, with highly restrictive advertising and public education campaigns and tax money that goes toward that? Not even going to come near answering that question, are we? So, we jump to the Sabbat conjecture. I've covered this on the show a few times, but basically the idea here is this. With alcohol and tobacco, you bring in a dollar worth of taxes for every $10 worth of expenses in social costs. Now, this is true. Kinda. The social costs are based on a lot of dubious statistics about, absenteeism at work and comparative incomes and yada, yada, yada. But still, it's somewhat true. You know why? Because alcohol and tobacco are toxic and addictive. They will kill you, and they will harm your organs. And marijuana is not. There was a Canadian study that was undertaken in 2011 that evaluated the per-user social costs and per-user enforcement costs for the three most popular drugs. And they found that the social cost of an average smoker was $800 a year. The social cost of an average drinker was $165 a year. And the social cost of an average cannabis smoker was $20 a year. That's right, a pot smoker is 1/8 the cost of a drinker and 1/40 the cost of a tobacco smoker. So, if for every $1 that you spend on alcohol, it costs 10 in costs, but a cannabis smoker is 1/8 of those costs, then the costs work out to about $1.10 per every dollar that you got out. And if you take the number for the cigarette smoking, 1/40, then for every dollar of tax, it costs you 1/4 in costs. I'm willing to compromise and say the number's somewhere in between 25 cents and $1.10 or $1.12 for every marijuana smoker. I think the taxes will more than cover the problem.
So, you know, that's a great, and that's with today's policy, not 80 years ago. I just don't think it's the right path, and still more people smoke than smoke pot.
Right. Let's get another one here.
Okay.
Why does
I got to interrupt because I feel so much for Ryan Grimm, because he could be doing what I'm doing right now, and he is being a gentleman and an interviewer and a professional journalist here, and not tearing him to shreds because he's got as much info or more than I have. So kudos in that respect to Ryan.
I think all use is abuse and requires treatment and or jail time. I guess the point of that is,
yeah, I don't.
You know, is there some use that should be legally acceptable?
Yeah. Well, here's the issue. I don't think all use is abuse. So first of all, I subscribe to the clinical definitions that are, you know, the medical communities come to, which are, you know, we have abuse, we have use. Actually, now they're changing the definitions. We have addiction and so on. Mm-hmm. So all use is not abuse and addiction. I get that. I get that only 1 out of 6 kids who try pot will become addicted to it. Okay. I get that 5 out of 6 actually won't have that many problems. But I'm very concerned about that 1 out of 6, because they cause the problems, they cause the social costs, they cause the IQ drop, they cause the car crashes. And so our policies, I think, should be focused on that 1 out of 6 that can't handle it. And I
think that's a great idea. So why do we support the current policy that says 91% of those kids know another kid who's a weed dealer? That's the policy you're supporting. I get so incensed over this "what about the children," this WOTC, "what about the children" syndrome that implies that us on the other side, that we do not care about the children. Part of the reason we do this every day is because we care about the children, because we don't want teenagers dealing weed in the parking lots. We want it put behind lock and key, and we want IDs to be checked. And most of all, we want kids to get accurate information about marijuana. We don't want them to be told that marijuana and heroin are in the same category, that they're in the same classification. And then someday when they encounter marijuana, they think, well, gee, heroin must be as safe. We don't want that for our kids. This is why we're doing it, Kevin. And it's just offensive every time they bring up "what about the children," as if those of us who support legalization are somehow secretly twisting our cartoon mustaches and saying, "Oh, good. More kids will smoke pot. That's what we want." That is ridiculous. We've got a whole bunch more of this Kevin Sabet debunking that we'll have to get to. And as our chat room noted, yes, they gave Kevin Sabet 10 minutes on air with basically nobody rebutting him, basically allowing him to spout his opinion. So that's why we're here on the Russ Belville Show on 420 Radio, to make sure at least somebody gets to speak out against this and call shenanigans on all of it. Shenanigans! Shenanigans!
Shenanigans.
Hey, that's all the time I got here for hour one. We'll finish the rest of this in hour two. So for those of you watching live, stick around. For those of you who are podcast listeners, you can get a podcast subscription to hour two if you are a VIP member of 420 Radio. We are completely listener supported. Go to 420radio.org, click on Join Us, and help support independent marijuana media. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. Take a seat, you're growing, you're dying, you're